Carl Word in South Africa.
Shout out to Carl Word. Shout out to Carl Word. Here we go.
Hey, what's up? This is Kyle Watson, and you're listening to After Hours with Kyle Word.
Firstly, yeah, thanks so much for making the time and being able to touch base. I know you've been in the US for the Mind Machines tour. Please tell me a bit about that. I've had such FOMO watching you get so stuck into it on Instagram. It's looked incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a Mind Machines tour, and the whole idea behind that was it was meant to first happen in 2020, and then obviously that didn't happen. So the whole idea was just based around the set that's all original. So the whole set from start to finish is just Kyle Watson, whether it's like tracks that people know, tracks people don't know, new stuff that I'm testing out, remixes, edits, things that, you know, I maybe did like 5-10 years ago that were popular that just never came out. So it was a cool opportunity for me to just like dig back into the catalog. And yeah, the whole idea was to do like a long tour just of those shows, basically. So we did like, I think it was 9 or 10 dates of those shows across the country, across the US. And it was the first time that we had ever done this kind of show. You know, we also did all of it pretty much like by ourselves, like Tash, my wife, and I, working with my booking agents, we all kind of like came together to kind of make it happen and stuff. And it was the first time we'd really done this amount of work ourselves. And the shows were all great. I mean, we had our speed bumps. Obviously, there's always speed bumps when you do a tour like this. And obviously, the risk was kind of high as well. We were doing like the biggest rooms that we had done and stuff like that. So sometimes that worked, sometimes it didn't. I mean, to be brutally honest. But overall, I think the tour was amazing. Like, the shows were so good. The vibes were amazing. Everybody who bought a ticket came out because they supported the music, right? So like when that happens, you have like an amazing, amazing crowd to play to. So yeah, it was really cool.
No, exactly. And I mean, tell me a bit about obviously the shows speak for themselves, but I mean, the process behind putting them together, like you said, was just you guys. It must have been quite the journey to go through, especially being in the States and having to manage all these moving parts and pick up where you left off from 2020. I mean, let's not even get into that. But how was the planning process behind that? I mean, these things require a very intricate and tight-knit team. I mean, how was that process putting the team together, for one?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult, for sure. I mean, I don't think that I would ever want to take that amount of work on again. Like, if we were to do something like this in the future, like, there would definitely need to be other people involved, because I found myself always thinking about, like, you know, having to think about what was happening like the next weekend or coming up in 2 weeks' time, checking the ticket counts, like making sure that we were doing enough like marketing here, there, making sure all the meet and greets were like lined up, because we did meet and greets at every show. So like there was always something on my mind, like not even only on the run, like that's bad enough, just like the 2 months before leading up to it, making sure everything was in place. So, you know, like I said, luckily I had Tash to help me with like the she does like the advancing, which is like all of the logistics and booking, making sure the flights are booked, making sure like the promoters and all the communication with them is all like, you know, locked in, and the guests and all that stuff. And my agent luckily kind of like did a lot of work to lock in like the support acts and communicate with them and stuff. So like, luckily that stuff was sorted, but even though that was handled, it was still like way too much thinking about like how you structure the set, all of the creative stuff involved with that. Just, we also did like I did all of the animations for like the graphics for the shows and stuff, like for the LED screens and everything. Like, I did all those myself because I have like a history in motion graphics. So I was also doing all of that kind of stuff. It was intense, dude.
So it was your show through and through, no matter what, from visuals to all the graphics, putting it on. And then like for the show itself, I mean, how was it to see the crowd resonate with music that was not necessarily released? However, over all the years of following you from live sets or broadcasts and streams and the likes, to actually know these records and bootlegs even that aren't released, that may have been out, and then going off to them like they have been.
Yeah, it's cool. It was really, it was amazing, because you could see some people actually like you know, recognize some of the records that flew under the radar for most other people, you know, like not necessarily the ones that got released, like, you know, the bootlegs that maybe appeared in like a mixtape somewhere in like 2015 or something random like that. And even just playing some tracks that are, that were like 2012, 2013, 2014, which were popular in South Africa, you know, like obviously because I was based there at the time and like way, you know, way before my music even like popped off in the US. So it was quite cool to see like those types of fans come out to the shows. And obviously also for me, just to be able to like dig into like the old records and just find this stuff, which I'd forgotten about.
It must've been quite nostalgic to go through all of that, you know, just to tap into literally searching your name and your, whatever the file name would be on your desktop and have these hundreds of records pop up.
Literally hundreds.
Geez, what was the prep putting together the set to actually decide what went on, what went, what wasn't? Or did you manage to literally just have this bank and spread them over the different shows, I would imagine?
So basically, it was a little trickier than, you know, like, because the first time I ever did this type of show, it was in South Africa. It was actually a truth. I can't remember the year, but it was probably 2019. But the first time I did this type of show in South Africa, it's totally different because that's the market that's grown up listening to the music. So if you play something that's like 7 years old, there's a chance, there's a good chance that people are going to know it, right? Like a lot of the stuff that I was digging back through, there's no way that like the US would have ever been exposed to that stuff. So it chopped out like quite a bit of the catalog. Also, I didn't necessarily want the set to feel dated, right? And like, if you look at the way the music, like my music is kind of, like sort of evolved, let's say, over like the past like 7, 8, 10 years or whatever. There's like a big difference between saying that I've written like seven years ago and something I wrote last year. So I didn't want to I wanted to make sure the set didn't feel like it was just old music, right? So I had to be very careful about what I kind of fit in and where it kind of, how long I played like a section for, and you know, how I moved from something that was older just quickly into something that was more recent so that you could kind of like keep the attention going and stuff. And it was definitely a tricky one. Like I spent quite a bit of time like just loading up, like I think it's probably 250 songs in total, and just like checking stuff out, like deleting things, making sure that wasn't in the playlist, and adding things that maybe could have worked, and jumping into the production software, isolating like vocals from records that were too old but the vocals were good, and finding a way to like overlay them over like the newer records and stuff. So it was definitely a cool process. And I mean, like if I ever did this again in the future, there's obviously like up to now, that's a lot of the work that's been done, which is cool.
With being on the road like you have been, how is the process of keeping creative and keeping the music production going? Because I mean, you release a lot of music and there have been a lot of releases in 2022. Is there like a moment outside of producing music and outside of touring where you can actually, one, regenerate and re-energize to have that break in creativity, even though it may not ever switch off, or does it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. To be honest, like it's something I've been actually speaking to Tash about for a while, is that like I have the studio here, which I'm talking to you in. I have like an iMac here, and all the stuff is set up here, right? So like this is really where I write my music. It's not that easy for me to just pick up a laptop and like go on the road and continue writing, right? So up until even this trip where I had like, you know, good sections of off days where I actually had nothing to do, where I actually decided to take like a laptop with Cubase, mm-hmm. writing Cubase over to the States and actually work on stuff. So I managed to like squeeze a little bit of production in and meet some of those commitments that I had like on the production side, which was actually cool. It's nice when you write in a different space. There's something interesting about just being in a different space creatively, you know, you just approach things differently. The limitations and everything, usually interesting shit can happen. But yeah, going into like that sort of that break from creativity and stuff, I think like, to be honest, in 2022, I had a lot of releases. I think just purely because I was in the studio so much, you know, I didn't have any touring to do. So I was just like writing a lot of music and I was just getting it out. 2021, pretty much the same thing. Like I only really got back to touring in October 2021, back to the States when I was able to get back. So I had a lot of releases in 2021 as well. 2022, I feel like I've had actually, you know, a lot less releases. I've been almost more busy in the studio, but releasing less. It's like a weird position to be in. But I've been working on a bunch of like projects and stuff, which are, you know, like more longer term, you know, as opposed to what I usually do is I'll just like bash out a record and straight away I'll send it to labels and try and get it out. Like I've kind of been working on projects that are a bit more further down the line, which has been cool. But it's definitely important to have that break in creativity, because otherwise you just feel like you're going flat out. Like after 7 weeks or whatever on the road, you actually don't necessarily want to get back in the studio like the week you get back and just like start writing music. It's just like there's a way too much, you know. So I think like you have to have a bit of a break. You have to go for like you know walks and spend time with the people you love and all of that kind of stuff to just like charge up again. The inspiration just kind of like flows back after that.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned now that you're spending more time in the studio, but releasing a lot less, you know, apart from just wrapping up a track and getting it released. I would imagine now there must be a moment where you are working on records and, you know, for as much as you work on and as much as is on that machine and on that laptop, no one has to hear anything that you've filled around with or made, or whether you've played it out or not. At what point do you go, or do you feel confident enough? All right, well, let's release it to the world.
It's another interesting question, because I feel like over the years, I've become a lot more critical of my own music, right? So if I think back 5 years, I was a lot less critical. I was finishing a record and immediately feeling like happy with it and sending it out, you know, like, and sometimes you'll look back on some of those tracks like 2 years later and go like, maybe I should have worked on it a bit more, or maybe I could have made something stronger. You know, maybe this could have been better or whatever. So there's like some level of regret, I think. And that, I think that happens with any artist. So taking all of that into like account, I've become a lot more critical of my music. So I sit with things a lot longer nowadays, you know, like I will finish a record and sort of test it out. And if it doesn't hit like the way that I want it to, I'll literally go and rewrite it. Even if I don't have a chance to actually test it out to a crowd, sometimes I'll just revisit it in 2 weeks and be like, this is shit. And just totally rewrite the thing. And I've done that a lot more lately. And I've also spent a lot more time on the ideas that I feel are like very strong, to make sure that I squeeze like every little ounce out of it, right? You know? And I think probably the biggest like validator, or, you know, the thing that really makes you want to get the record out and like that convinces you that it could actually be released out to the world, is when you actually get to play it in front of people and you see like a very positive reaction. I think that's like pretty much the biggest tick. That, and, you know, potentially sending it to, I mean, let's say like mentors, not necessarily mentors, but people that you look up to in the industry, and they play it out. You know, it's got something special. So recently there've been a few records that I've sent out to like a few of like my like higher profile peers who are doing like really big shows and headline shows and stuff. And they've been playing them out, and they've been like, you know, they've got videos of them, and they're reposting Instagram stories of people videoing them dropping the track. And, you know, so that's like the validation that, okay, cool, well, we're onto something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, from that point where you're road testing them, how far from being complete are they? I mean, I'm sure from that process, you probably hear something on the system. Okay, this needs tweaking, that needs tweaking. Does that happen often?
It does. Yeah, it does. It's a little difficult to kind of, it's more about like the songwriting that you kind of pick up, you know, like in the structure, looking at people and going like, oh, they're flattening out a little bit now. We need to beef the section up, or we need to move through things quicker because like the energy is kind of like dipping here and people are getting a little, they're losing interest to a degree. Those are the kinds of things that you can observe by like testing out the records and stuff. From a mixing point of view, like it's actually just better to be in the studio and just get good at mixing. But like 100% stuff that I'm playing out sometimes, I mean, it's happened plenty of times, more than I can count, where I've played out a record and it's just not worked, and I've never played it out again.
Shit, really?
Oh. So those are the ideas that you put on the shelf, and, you know, like half a year later, you bring it up, or, you know, like it's actually happened quite a lot recently where there's been like pretty much a finished record, but it's just not hit right, you know, just not feeling where it's hitting. And like a remix will come along, or an acapella will be presented, or like a top line or something. And you'll just be like, dude, I have this whole project, like this song is already written. They just put the top line on top and it's like, dude, it just comes together. And that's happened a few times, which, I mean, that's a pretty good feeling.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it all comes together. With regards to your upcoming tour back to South Africa, and I know Truth in particular with the Masquerade show, I just want to tap back to a couple of the moments where Truth is and what role Truth's played over the years of your career. And you mentioned earlier doing that Carl Watson showcase a couple of years ago as well. You know, how's that been over the years and now to come back to it as one of the shows while you're in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really excited for the Truth show, to be honest. Truth is special, obviously. It's like, I'm going to show my age now, but I was going to Truth in like 2006. And yeah, I mean... When I was going there as a just like a clubber, I was like, this is literally the place that I want to play at. Like, and I started DJing by that point, and I was like, this is literally the place that I really want to play at. So it was like a very like important goal for me at the time. And then obviously I ticked that goal off, and throughout my career, so from like, especially let's say from like 20, sort of 13, 14, all the way through to basically before COVID, it's been like the primary place for me. It was the primary place for me to like test out music to a crowd that like really appreciated it, you know? And a lot of my growth sort of as an artist has got to do with that venue. So it's really cool to be coming back now after pretty much being away since before 2020, dude. So like, I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, and literally the last time I did like a proper club show in South Africa was in 2019. Like, I'd played a couple of little things in 2020 right before everything closed, but there were small little things, you know, like I was on the road in Australia at the time, so I didn't play big shows. So this will be the first time I'm playing Truth properly since 2019.
Yeah, and people are hungry, and so yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's very exciting for me. Like, it's the one show that I'm extremely pumped for.
And from South Africa, after being back here, where do you head off to next for the rest of November, December?
So, dude, I basically have like the Christmas period off, which is amazing.
Well, that's great, especially after the last couple of weeks touring. Jeez.
Yeah, no. So after this sort of like the seven or eight weeks of like flat out travel and shows and stuff that I just come off the back of, like intensely draining. So I've got like a couple of weeks now, and then obviously South Africa, which will be cool. Like, we're there for 2.5 weeks or something like that, I think. And then when we get back to the UK, it's just till we're going to spend some time with family, just have a relaxed Christmas, family Christmas, easy Jan. I think for me, like from a career point of view, now I have, I can really sit down and think about, you know, the next few years. There's a great opportunity for me to think about what happens in 23, 24, 25, like what's the 3-year plan, set some stuff in place, figure out like where I want the music to go, and spend some good time in the studio, actually like crafting stuff and finding a sound and everything. So it'll be a good time for me to just like get everything in a row and line up for 2023, which we're already looking at stuff that has come in.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, you know, As chaotic as the past couple of weeks have been, and you being very hands-on with the shows, I'm sure when it ends, you must go like, okay, well, now what? You actually kind of chase that adrenaline to a degree, I'm sure, you know?
There's always something to do, dude. Like, as a music producer, as any creative, I suppose, like, you know, you're making music, you're making art, whatever, there's always something to do. You rarely ever kind of like sit down and go like, oh, there's nothing to do, because legit, there is always something to do. There's always a track to write. There's always, you know, as lame as it is, some content to make, or, you know, there's always stuff to do. So there is an aspect of that, but yeah, there is always this thing in the back of your mind going like, you should be making music right now or something, you know?
There's one thing I have to ask you, and it's been something that I saw on Instagram, which I'm hoping there is some feedback on, the Red Alert petition. It sounded so good. Tell me, what was the feedback there? I mean, I just saw the chaos on Instagram that just kept going.
It's so frustrating, man. It's really frustrating. So that's happened actually twice with two records now recently, where we've got to a point where there's a track and it's based around a sample and the sample can't get cleared. Anyway, this was a long story, but I'll give you the short version. I made this record. Tash and I were driving and she was like, what can you bootleg? She just goes to like this random 90s or whatever playlist and like Red Alert comes on. And I was like, Red Alert, you know, like we both like looked at each other. We're like, this is the one. So I was like, okay, let me just do it. So I did it anyway, sent it out to, initially only sent out to Chris Lake, and he started playing it and it started like creating like a lot of buzz. You know, people were videoing like, who's this? What is this? People were videoing it. Chris was like, this is a good record. Like, this is right up my alley. Like if you can get like this, this sample cleared, like I want to put this on Black Book. So, you know, for me, like that, that label is like a target. So I was like, okay, well, let's do what we can to make this happen. Anyway, long story short, bunch of speed bumps, looked like it was going to happen. Then the rights holder changed, that the term had ended. Then like it said, you know, all of these different issues started popping up. Then like all of a sudden the label released like a remix pack of these remixes of Red Alert of other artists. So when that happened, it was like, it just made zero sense to put the record out. So that's when we just kind of like put a cap on it. And, you know, the people who have it, it's not many. There's maybe like four or five people in the world who have it. But who knows, you know, maybe there's a chance in like, you know, a year's time or whatever, where it makes sense. But, you know, it's probably not going to come out, which is really lame because it's
I know. Oh, I was hoping there was a happy ending coming there, but it's all good.
No,
we'll just have to wait to hear it here.
yeah, exactly. I'll definitely be playing it in South Africa, but it's one of those records which, for the time being at least, or the foreseeable future, will just be, you know, something in my record bag.
But Carl, I'm looking forward to you coming back here, and I'm sure I'll see you that night, and I'm sure sometime over the 2 weeks that you're here. And it's been so great to catch up with you, and I'm glad to hear that. I mean, firstly, congratulations on the past couple of years and the tour and the music that's been released. It's phenomenal, and I'm looking forward to what's to come, that's for sure. And I know you've got some time off, so I mean, when that all does resume, we'll connect again.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thank you very much for having me, dude. It's been good to chat to you, and I'm looking very forward to coming back to SA and seeing everyone, and playing some dope shows.